Hello, world, and welcome to another episode of the PO Show. That's Polar Opposites, right here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Big T, and as always, joined by my co-host, my friend, your friend, soon to be everybody's friend, Mr. Cool Hand Phil. Phil, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. I'm coming off a week of vacation. I got my nap on the couch tonight, so I'm refreshed. I'm ready to go. Looking forward to another great show.
All right. Well, yeah, I hope you can bring it. I hope that nap got you all rested up so you can bring it. As we are at knee-deep in this NBA Finals, ready to crown a winner. Could happen tomorrow night, could happen Friday night, but we know at the end of it, end of this week, we will have a new NBA champion. And of course, this time of year, we can't talk about the Finals without having our floor general on the program. Talking about Mr. Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame himself, Ron Rutland Jr. How are you, sir?
Doing well, folks. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, listen, we got to get into it because there's so much to talk about in terms of Game 4, Game 5, and then pending Game 6. And we'll start the show then the same way we start every single show. As adults, you make plenty of decisions every single day. And we're just glad you decided to spend a little bit of time with us right here on the PO Show. You know, Phil, this is a little bit different for us. I mean, typically around this particular time of the year, I mean, granted, we are, you know, we're always talking about basketball as into their playoffs and the basketball postseason. But usually there are other storylines, whether it be the PGA or football in their OTAs, organized team activities and whatnot. But this finals, Phil, is so compelling. It has completely trumped any and everything else in the sports world. Yes, there is a very exciting Stanley Cup finals going on, but it pales in comparison to what's going on with the NBA, and the numbers are showing it. Phil, right now the numbers show that this has been the most watched NBA Finals, in a couple of games ever in history. And I don't think it's any surprise that LeBron James has a lot to do with it, but don't sleep. Steph Curry has a lot to do with that too. So let's get into these games. I mean, the last time we spoke, it seemed as if LeBron James and company had they tied it up and they had the momentum, and it seemed as if they were about to take control of this series. In fact, they went ahead and went up 2-1 at one point. And then, of course, Golden State was able to answer and tie things up. And now Golden State is one game away from an NBA championship. Just real quick, just to get the pulse of the room, I'll let you guys go around. Based on what you saw, Game 4 and Game 5, Game 4, of course, is where where it appeared that Golden State was able to wrestle the momentum back away from Cleveland, and then of course Game 5 then take the lead. Just your impressions of where we are in the series based on what you saw in Game 4, Game 5. Ron, I'm interested to hear you, because let me just go ahead and give you props right now. If you listen to the show at all, you'll know early in the series, Ron said the best thing for Golden State to do was to let Iguodala start and be and have a defensive assignment to guard LeBron James. And sure enough, in Game 4, that's exactly what Steve Kerr did, and it seemed to change the momentum of this series. So I'll start right there with you, Ron. Tell me about what you saw Game 4, Game 5, and where you feel the series is right now.
Yeah, I appreciate that. But I must admit, the twist was that, you know, the person that they left out of that rotation was Bogut, and I was looking more at replacing Barnes, so I was really surprised with that. But, you know, I think, you know, a lot of people talk about, you know, well, Iguodala, is he really making an impact because LeBron is still getting 40 points? But if he's not really as efficient with those points. And I think he makes it very difficult. I mean, LeBron is going to, I mean, if you're taking, you know, 30-plus shots.
Right.
I mean, you just want to, I mean, he's going to get numbers. You want to try to make it as difficult as possible.
Right,
and if you can keep them under 50% shooting, you know, low 40s, high 30s, you've done your job with a high-volume shooter in that case. But I really just feel the difference has been is the players on Golden State, you know, I hate to call them role players, but I guess, you know, that's kind of what we label them. You know, they've stepped up.
Right.
Draymond Green has stepped up his game, you know, brought back some confidence. Harrison Barnes is knocking down shots. Iguodala, I mean, not just defensively, he's bringing it offensively. And to me, you know, that is the difference in the game. And, you know, you got to look at philosophies when you're a coach. You know, usually your philosophy is one of two ways.
Okay.
You know, we're going to let your superstars get theirs and keep, you know, the role players from getting anything, or, you know, we're going to keep the superstars from getting theirs and your role players have to beat us. But right now, the role players are beating them. And the superstars are getting off when they need to be. Curry, obviously, we've seen what he did in the last game.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's been the biggest difference in, you know, a huge momentum swing for Golden State.
Right. You know, and something else, too, as far as, you know, LeBron James scoring the 40 points, and I'm not hearing anybody talk about it. You know, they really almost want to break down the points that he's getting versus the minutes that he's playing. I mean, because isn't part of the fact that he's scoring 40 points is that he's playing 40-plus minutes, almost 50 minutes. So, of course, he's going to get more production in terms of a total point tally. He's playing more minutes. But if you took him down to, you know, and I don't know what's normal for him. I mean, he plays a lot of minutes anyway, but if you took him down to, let's say, 28 to 32 range, you know, those 40 point games are what are they? 28 points? 30? You know, I don't know, but you know, some of that I just think, and no one is really talking about it, some of that 40 points that he's getting every night is a direct result of the minutes that he's playing. But what about you, Phil? Tell me, what did you see game 4, game 5, and for you, again, I give you credit. I had started to vacillate a little bit, especially when Cleveland went up 2-1, and it looked like they were in, you know, they were controlling the series. But you steadfast that Golden State would have enough to get it done, and you said it was going to be a deep and long series. And right about now, you're looking like a soothsayer as Golden State's one win away. But tell me how you see the series right now.
Well, you know, you mentioned the rating and how it's been the highest rated finals ever, and the series has absolutely lived up to the hype. I mean, every single game has been entertaining, has been intriguing, and it's come down, you know, the first two games are overtime, so the series lived up to the hype. I mean, this was a finals that I was the most excited about since probably Jordan had been in the finals, and usually when that happens, then it's a dud. You know, a team sweeps or whatever, it just didn't live up to the hype, but I feel like this time that it did. And, you know, after games 4 and 5, what, you know, last week when we talked after, you know, the first two games or whatever, I said that the Cavaliers are like the Memphis Grizzlies. Now, of course, they're different in the fact that they have the best player in the world playing for the Cavaliers. That does make a difference, but I felt like the Cavaliers were trying to play that role that the Grizzlies, you know, play, muck it up, make it ugly, try to take Golden State out of the game, slow the game down, all of those things. And you saw against Memphis, you know, they dropped, the Warriors dropped games 2 and 3, and then they won 3 straight. Now, I don't know if they can go into Cleveland
right
and win this game, game 6, I mean. But if they do, I mean, it would be the same blueprint that they came up in the Memphis series, you know, where they get down and then they figure things out. And in games 4 and 5, you saw it seemed like where they figured things out, they went small, Iguodala started, played very good defense on LeBron. And, you know, to your point, even though LeBron is still getting these shots and getting these points, if you listen to the players and you listen to the coaches, they never say, hey, we want to hold LeBron to 20 points. Even though they did in game 4, you never hear that. They just say, we want to make it as tough as possible. We want him to work as hard as possible. Kind of like Klay Thompson did against James Harden. Right. In the series against the Rockets, even though it looked like James Harden, you know, was putting up 37, 40 points, and you say, oh, wow, Klay Thompson is not doing a good job, you know, Harden was having to make extremely difficult shots, and I think that's their goal against LeBron, and he's making them.
Right.
You know, and you got to talk about efficiency and all that. I think game five, you know, watching the game was probably LeBron's most efficient game as far as, you know, how many shots he took and how many he made. But the other games that he put up 40-something points, I mean, he's breaking his own record as far as shot attempts go. And to your point, Terrence, I mean, he's playing all these minutes. So, yeah, the points, you got to kind of factor that in and factor it across the shot attempts. But, I mean, don't get it right. It doesn't matter how you split the numbers. LeBron is still playing incredible basketball.
Oh,
you know,
no doubt.
It doesn't matter if he's taking, you know, 45 shots a game. He is still being very productive and is carrying the load for his team. But I've been very, I can't even say I'm surprised, because I felt like after watching, you know, Curry and the Rocky structure they got, I thought they would figure it out and it would be the same blueprint that they came up with against a Memphis team that plays similar basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they've won two games straight, but I'm very interested. I mean, I can't tell you how excited I am to watch this game. I mean, I cannot wait for tomorrow night. See how this game plays out, and I would be surprised. I'll go ahead and go on record. I think LeBron will put up 50 points tomorrow night.
Whoa. And they may need him to. They may, in fact, yeah, need him to put those up. But I will definitely agree with you in, as far as the excitement factor in these games. And I think for me personally, the reason for why I am so excited to watch these games and why I'm enjoying this final so much, because I feel like this is the NBA Finals that the league has promised us as fans year after year after year. We just haven't gotten. You have to remember, we never got Kobe versus LeBron. And that one, that final was promised to us, and we never got it. You know, the Lakers-Celtics finals, you know, the Celtics were more about a big three, and you didn't really have that alpha versus another alpha. Same thing is true when Miami had their run, you know, because of the big three. There was no alpha, you know, mano a mano type thing. You didn't get that. You know, and I think I've been on record saying, you know, my favorite finals of all time has always been, you know, New York and Houston, because it was Patrick Ewing against Hakeem Olajuwon. And we haven't had that in a very, very, very long time. Like I said, we were promised Kobe and LeBron, and, you know, and it never came to fruition. So for me personally, to be able to see, you know, MVP, you know, the reigning MVP versus the previous year's MVP, that's saying something. I mean, that you that's what you want, you know, and you rarely get it in professional sports. So for me, that's what I've enjoyed in this series so much, being able to watch these two gladiators go at it every night. And, you know, so much of what, you know, so much of what we said in terms of what we were going to see when this series started, you know, we talked about the, you know, the likelihood of Curry trying to do too much in terms of showing the world that, you know what, I really am worthy of an MVP trophy. And I think you may have saw some of that in those early games, particularly with his off shooting. But then somewhere along the line, he remembered who he was, and good God Almighty, I think he remembered it in the fourth quarter last night. Would have been when he remembered it. You know, I looked at some, and it didn't occur to me until I was looking at the box scores of Game Five. Curry had 17 points in Game Five in the fourth quarter of Game Five. Those 17 points would have outscored the rest of his team's production for the entire game. I mean, don't get me wrong, you're right. What LeBron's doing is retarded. When you are leading your team in points, rebounds, and assists for the entire series, not just a game, but the entire series, yeah, you're playing grown man basketball without a doubt. And maybe that performance kind of overshadows what Steph does, because Steph's, you know, what he's doing is it appears that sometimes almost effortless. And like I said, and it did really, it had to, when I looked at the box score and saw his 17 in the fourth quarter and then looked up and saw nobody else scored more than 17 for the whole game, that's when it sunk in that, you know what, you know, we really are seeing two gladiators going at it. So we've got game six coming up. You made the statement that you weren't sure if they'd get this win or not. I tend to agree with you, but I'll tell you this: they better get it. If they seriously want this championship, they better wrap it up in six, because the last thing you want to do, and they've proved it to themselves, the last thing you want to do is to give that team, that city, that franchise hope. That's the worst thing you can do, is give Cleveland hope. Because if you do give them hope, not only will they, again, be coming off of 2 days rest, and that was the one thing, you know, we talked about at the top, you know, after those first two games, that at some point in time, the fatigue factor would set in. And I think that's exactly what we saw in game four, was the result of fatigue. You know, and it took a while to set in, but it did. And maybe it wasn't so much game four as it was five. But at any rate, during those two games, that fatigue factor set in. You know, Dellavedova had to go to the hospital to have, you know, fluids pumped in, to get an IV of fluids pumped in. Yet, you know, they wanted to make it out like, oh, it's no big deal. I'm like, okay, that's not normal. you don't play basketball and then go to the hospital, stay overnight, and then come out the next day. Oh, that's fine. No, that's not normal. There will be some residual effects, and we saw that. But speaking of Dele, and I am going to move on, I'll say this, and I definitely want to get you guys' opinion on this too. The thing that I like most about Game 4 and Game 5 is that I don't have to listen to the name Dele anymore. I don't have to hear about him being this defensive mastermind. I don't have to hear about his scrappiness is irritating to Steph Curry. Steph Curry, not only did he quiet that noise, quite honestly, and it's sad to say it, but it's true, quite honestly, he in effect just ended Dele's career last night. I'm just saying that Dele's career is essentially over. He won't get re-signed. I mean, somebody may pick him up for a little piece of change. He'll go back to being a role player like he was, like he's always been. And you know, maybe a year after that, he's out of the league. I see Dele as being a second rate, a poor man's Jeremy Lin. That's what I see Dele as, a one trick pony that got hot at the right time, captured the national media's eye. Everybody's running out buying jerseys, and then, you know, 6 months later, you can't even remember the dude's name. You know, I mean, think about it. If I said, oh yeah, remember that time when Jeremy Lin went off and they beat the Lakers and he scored 40? No, you don't remember. I mean, and even if you do remember, you're like, so what's your point? It doesn't even matter. So it's just the same guy, but I'll open that up though. Am I overboard when I say Dele's done, that his career is over? Or, you know, will he be able to use this series as a launching pad to, cause keep in mind, I mean, this is an undrafted person that we're talking about. He wasn't drafted by any team. Okay. I mean, you know, somebody gave him a tryout and picked him up. But anyhow, you know, am I overboard, or is he going to take this, springboard it into a legitimate NBA career?
But Dennis, you know, I know a really good psychiatrist that I could recommend you to, because I can tell this Dellavedova guy, I mean, is really bothering you. But I will say he's probably the most unorthodox player. I mean, I'm almost in tears when I watch him play. Like when he throws the alley-oops, when he shoots that little runner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, like when those guys run and they click their heels, you know, they jump up in the air and click their heels. If you pause it at the right time, every time he leaves the floor, it looks like he had just completed one of those. Like he clicked his heels up in excitement. I don't know how he does it. But I think you're overreacting. I mean, if you based everyone's career off of a defensive assignment on Steph Curry would end everyone's career. LeBron James doesn't want any part of Steph Curry. I mean, these guys are considered great defensive players. Curry is just one of those guys that he is incredible at creating space, change of direction. He's a great master with the basketball. So he's almost impossible to defend because he can knock down these shots. Now, as we saw in the first three or four games, he was not making that shot. None of his teammates were making the shot. And so they were losing games, and it looked like, oh, wow, they're playing great defense. Well, no, it's not necessarily the case. They're just not making the basket. So now that they are, it makes them look bad. But, I mean, when you go back and look at the replays, Kelly, he does have a hand in his face. I mean, it is pretty good defense, but you get made to look silly because he plays with you before he actually shoots the shot. But Kelly did make a good recovery. So, I mean, I think he can be effective. He gives you a grit that a lot of these teams need. He can come in and frustrate the other player. I think he had Steph Curry frustrated earlier, you know, because of his physical play. But just like you see with any series, you know, it takes a while for you to get those adjustments. Curry even mentioned that after game four that he saw something in the pick and roll that he could take advantage of. Uh-huh. I think they're going to continue to do this. So, no, I think you're overreacting. I think, you know, Dele can stay on the team because of his defensive play. Even though he cocks his head to the side every time he shoots and it looks ridiculous, he is fairly accurate, so I think he's safe to re-sign with the Cavs.
Yeah, okay. Well, just keep in mind, you sound just like all the people that fell in love with Jeremy Lin. You sound exactly like those people. But, Ron, am I overboard in saying that he'll be out of the league within 3 years?
I think you're a little overboard with it. We still got to put in perspective that, you know, Kyrie Irving is hurt. You know, that's why we're getting this huge dose of you know, Dellavedova. So it's not like he is a starting, you know, point guard.
True.
Capable player in this league. So, you know, but he has went out there and proved that he can play at this level.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to say, you know, I don't know if obviously you're saying, you know, is his contract up at the end of the season? Is that, you know, what it is? He's going to be a free agent? Is that how it is? Or
I think he was on a short lease anyway. I mean, I think they probably literally brought him in on a one-year deal. I mean,
I don't know, but even if he is, or if he, I think, you know, say, you know, I don't know, Cleveland did decide to let him go. I think, you know, someone definitely would give him an opportunity. I mean, you know, it's not a lot of, you know, strong backup point guard in the league. I think he can fit in somewhere. You know, he's shown defensively as he can be disruptive,
right,
at times.
Right.
And that's most of the time what you're looking for in your backup point guard, to be able to come in and not let you down defensively.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, if you got a guy that can come in and pick it up defensively, that's even better. So I think he's on his spot. I think he's on his keep. I think he's probably, you know, personally grown, you know, a lot of confidence. And I think he's fairly young. So I you know, I expect to see him be a journeyman type of player in this league.
And that's the difference too, Terrence, about Jeremy Lin. Jeremy Lin did not have the defensive acumen. You know, he didn't have the body type, you know, to be physical with other point guards. So I think that was his downfall. So I just think Dele, with him being able to play defense, I think there's teams around the league that could use a backup. Ron right. made a great point. If you can take your starter out and your other guy comes in just for that defensive presence to energize the team, not necessarily on an offensive standpoint, but to energize them on the defensive end, I think there's a lot of teams that could benefit from that. And, you know, to Ron's point too, you know, you have Irving that is out.
Right.
And so you're probably relying on Dellavedova right now on the offensive end when that's probably not his makeup. So if he can come in as a backup point guard for a team that has a big man presence or, you know, another player that they go to, then I think he would be even better suited for that style of play.
Right. And, you know, and everything you guys are saying are exactly right, which is really just furthering my point. Because what happened to Jeremy Lin, aside from the fact that he's a one-trick pony, is that people fell in love, and he and his agent did too, to the point where it's like, no. I'm a starter, and I want starter money. So New York didn't re-sign, because everything you just said was exactly right. New York didn't re-sign him because they wanted him to be the backup point guard. But no, he had it in his head, hey, but remember that game I scored 40 over the Lakers? Okay. So he went to Houston with starter money, and they paid him starter money. Well, the problem with paying a person starter money is they expect you to produce, and he couldn't. So that little trip in Houston lasted 1 year, and he was gone. And that's what happens to those guys. You know, it's not that they are untalented completely. No, they have their one trick. Jeremy Lin was that, just like you said, he could come in and run around and spark your offense and get things going. Dele is, hey, he's an agitating, defensive-minded individual that can come in and, you know, give you some good, solid defensive minutes. But that's it. And, you know, like I said, you get all this hype, you get the jersey sales. Some GM says, hey, we can fill the stands and sell jerseys, and let's sign him. Let's give him this starter money. And then the coach is like, well, I'm looking at my roster here. I'm paying all these, paying him this money. I'm going to have to give him some starter minutes. And it just never seems to work out. But we'll see. Probably too early. And you know what? And maybe I am being harsh because, you know, like I said, and if I look at the NBA over the past 2 years, those two names, Jeremy Lin and Matthew Dellavedova, I mean, and I won't take too much credit for it, but it's something that Colin Cowherd is known for saying. You know, he says it. You know, he says it in football. He says it in basketball. You know, he says it. You know, 32 other GMs could not have all been wrong. You know, nobody picked this guy up, and nobody picked him up for a reason. You know, but anyhow, this is
an. I mean, like Tom Brady got passed up the sixth round. The Patriots. What is the receiver? I can't even think of his name. But he's kind of new on the scene. So, I mean, some guys just have an eye for it. So I wouldn't base it off of that. Now, I would say Dellavedova would be an exception, not the rule, if he does make it. But a lot of these GMs are wrong on a lot of players.
Okay.
I mean, it's like saying if you draft the guy in the first round that everyone else wanted, who did the Lakers draft probably about 8 years ago? See, what if we can't even remember his name?
Somebody that's not in the league.
Everyone. What is it?
Somebody that's not in the league.
Yeah, and so everyone wanted this cat, and he's not in the league. DeMarcus Russell, though, those GMs are wrong, and they're wrong quite often.
Yeah, okay. All right, we'll keep it moving. We'll keep it moving. So many topics to talk about, in fact, and usually when we have a lot of moving topics, it's always a good time for one of my favorite segments of the show. That's when we can have an opportunity to look at all of these topics. I can get your opinion on whether or not the subject is fair, and if you don't think it's fair, then it's got to be filed. So let's go through that real quick. Let's start off right here at the top here. We'll start with the finals. In game four, Cleveland center Timothy, I love that name because it's Timothy with an F, like his mother was drunk when they did. What you want to call him? F, call him Timothy. But anyway, Timothy Mozgov scores 28 points. But in game five, scores 0 points, 0 assists, 0 rebounds in 9 minutes. Mozgov playing 9 minutes after a 28-point outing. Fair or foul? Ron, I'll start with you.
Wow, I mean, this is a tough one. I mean, when I look at it from a standpoint of, you know, I know every game is different. You know, everybody's been trying to make their adjustments, you know, strategy-wise and everything. So when I look at it, you know, what's on the line and what you're trying to do, you know, it's absolutely fair.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't agree with the move at all. I mean, if you want to play, you know, maybe not, you know, look to go to him or play him less minutes, but I think defensively it hurt.
Right.
I think, you know, you took a guy who was, you know, energetic,
who had the, in my opinion, you know, and I don't know, you know, a lot of people might not look at it this way, but I look at when players defensively, he had, to, in my opinion, he had the respect of the referees in terms of being able to not get power calls against him.
Exactly.
So you've taken that away. You know, offensive rebounds is where you were really hurting Golden State. You've taken that away. And, you know, I think it was just a huge overreaction, you know, from game four to, you know, adapt to play, the, you know, the same style of basketball that Golden State is playing. So, I mean, it's fair coaching decision, but foul as far as, in my opinion, as far as what they were trying, you know, getting away from what they were doing.
All right, so Ron says foul on that one. What about you, Phil? Fair or foul?
I'm going to jump right on Ron's back, and I'm going fair, too. I mean, they got blown out. So you can't afford, if you get blown out, when the Warriors go small, you decide, hey, we're going to stay big, we're going to stay true to ourselves, we're going to play our game, and you get blown out, you can't just sit there and say, okay, we're going to do the same thing. You have to make adjustments, you know, game in, game out. And after the game, you know, all the experts, and of course I'm doing air quotations here, all of the experts, they said, you know, you got to go small and match up with the Warriors. You know, you can't be at a disadvantage on, you know, the defensive end when they have five scorers now in the game and you guys are still playing big and you're, you know, Mozgov is trying to match up against a smaller, quicker player. It can't work. And it makes sense to me. But, you know, if they didn't make the change, I mean, what would we have said if they decided to go big again and lost game five? I mean, that's when, I mean, they burned the city down then, if that's what would have happened. So I think it's fair. You had to try it. The only reason we're saying this is because Steph Curry got hot. I mean, Mozgov would not have changed the game if he'd have been in there. The Cavs had the lead in the fourth quarter, and Steph Curry goes Steph Curry on them. Mm-hmm. And so Mozgov could not have changed that. It was just a move that they made. It was paying off. They were in the game. They had the lead. After being blown out in game four, it's absolutely fair.
Yeah. Okay. So you think it was fair. Okay. Well, yeah, I got to go with a hybrid answer, too, in terms of, I mean, I'm not mad at Coach Black for trying it. I'm not mad at him at all. But at the spot that J.R. Smith goes cold and you have no other offense on the floor, that's when I think you can put him in. Because look at it this way, guys. Look at it from the opposite side of it. By not putting Mozgov in, you're doing Golden State a serious solid in two ways. One, and let me address your point that, Phil, that you said that Curry just went Curry on him in the fourth quarter. Well, part of the way that Steph Curry got going was getting to the rim with his layups and his finger rolls. That's one of the ways he's got going. Well, guess what? If Mozgov is in there, he's not getting to the rim that easily. He's not doing all the layups and you know, and the reverse layups and all that. That's not happening. And maybe he doesn't go Curry in the fourth. Maybe he doesn't get off because Mozgov is there. The second solid that they're doing, by not having him on the floor, they're allowing Golden State to get rid of one of their liabilities offensively, which is Bogut. Because Bogut wasn't doing anything on the offensive end at all. So you allow them to substitute Bogut's ineffectiveness offensively with someone that can score. And so, like I said, I'm not mad at him for trying. I get it, you know. But at the spot that the game is slipping away from you, to Ron's point, you're getting killed on the offensive board. At some point, I think you do, because, and I don't remember which game it was, guys, and I need you to help me out on it. It may have been game two, but I'm thinking it's game three. If you recall in game three, and remember I had made the prediction about the second unit, and was talking about the second unit not being as productive as they had been, because Cleveland remained with their first unit on the floor. Well, and what I was saying about, and what really was happening there is, if you think about it, their second unit is their small ball team for the most part, because Golden State, that is, because they're taking out Bogut And, you know, they're going with that smaller lineup. But in that one game, game three, it's almost like the Cavs ignored them going small and stayed big. Now, yes, they were able to get inside and dribble around and score points. But guess what? Mozgov on the other end was able to do whatever he wanted because nobody could do anything with him, you know, i.e. the 28 points, you know, in game four. So, I'm not mad at him for trying it. But I do think at some point when you realize that the game was starting to slip away, to just sit there and say, well, maybe LeBron will do something. Maybe, you know.
But if you remember, he did it. You know, they had the lead in the fourth quarter. Once it started to slip away, they put Mozgov back in. He had a couple turnovers, just did not look good. And then it was too late then. But, I mean, they did try it. Yeah, it's just tough to, you know, second guess this when it looked like it was paying off.
Mm-hmm.
The game was so close after the previous game when they said, hey, we're staying big no matter what, and just absolutely got blown out. Even with Mozgov, 28 points, still just got smashed.
Okay. All right. Good deal. All right. Let's go on to the next. Fair or foul. LeBron James is the finals MVP, regardless of if the Cavaliers win or lose. Phil, I'll start with you.
I'm going to go foul with that. And I see the reason people would say that he is having an incredible final series. But it's hard for me to say that if Steph Curry, you know, was injured or was not on this team, would the Warriors still be in the finals? I don't think they would. I don't think the Cavaliers would even be in the playoffs if LeBron was there. So I just can't, if you took Curry out of it, because to me, he's going to win the finals MVP if the Warriors win. So if they do win, you know, I think that would be a big shot to take against them. You know, no disrespect to what LeBron is doing, but I just don't think the Warriors would accomplish what they're accomplishing right now without the MVP of the regular season, Steph Curry. I don't think you can slight him and say, hey, we're going to give it to LeBron anyway, even though we know what you bring to your team. We're just not going to value that just because, you know, LeBron is putting up, you know, a couple triple-doubles. So I say that's foul. LeBron, they're going to have to win the series, in my opinion, for LeBron to get the series MVP.
Okay. All right. What about you, Ron?
Yeah, I think that's foul, and it's incredible to me. You know, I don't know. You know, I listen to talk radio. You know, watch these sports shows. I mean, it's like ESPN is almost making a campaign for this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's unbelievable to me. I mean, yes, he put up 40. You know what I mean? And I mean, with the team that he has to do it. But you can't take nothing away from what, you know, Steph Curry has done the last couple games. You know, for Golden State, in my opinion, to, you know, the reason why they have, you know, taken control of this series. And if he has, you know, 25 to 30 points this next game and wins, it's a wrap. He's the MVP. He's the MVP. So, it's, you know, it sounds good, you know, but, yeah, I think it's just foul to just say, hey, you know what, we're going to give it to him. I don't care if it goes seven games. You know, I've heard that argument. Even if he goes seven games,
mm-hmm.
So LeBron goes out here and does what Kuhan says. He goes out here and gets 50. You know, they win, and we go to game seven. If Curry has a great game seven, and they win, you know, you still got to give it to him.
Right. Well, I'm going against both of y'all. I think it's totally and completely fair, mainly because, and I said it at the top of the hour, look, if in a seven-game series, if you lead all scorers in points, assists, and rebounds, I mean, what are you if not the most valuable person in the finals? I think...
A loser?
Well, luckily, it's not called the Most Valuable Loser Award. It's deemed the Most Valuable Player. And let's be honest, if LeBron's not on the floor, Cleveland gets... I mean, trounced every single game by 30 points. And you know it's true. I mean, they know it's true. So I think, yeah, you're right. You're exactly right. What he's doing is remarkable. And he should be recognized for doing a remarkable job with the Most Valuable Player trophy. Let's go on to the next one. Okay, I thought I'd put this one in here. I didn't. Last night during the post-game press conference, LeBron James, in a response to a question, states, and I quote, "I am the best player in the world," end quote. Fair or foul? And I'll start with Ron.
Yeah, I was watching that live when he made my, when he said that statement in my mouth about I mean, that's tough. I'm, you know, I always like humility, you know, humble guys. But I have to say it's fair. He doesn't come across that way very often. So, but, you know, I guess I look at it, you know, sometimes we all get our moments, you know, we can kind of feel ourselves a little bit.
Right.
And, you know, but really, you know, I mean, everybody says it. Everyone says it. I mean, no matter who you listen to, they all say it. He's the best player in the world. He's the best player in the world. I've never heard that term so much towards one player, you know, in the way when we describe a player. You know?
Right.
Even Jordan, everybody just would say he's the best player in the world. He's the best player in the world. So, I mean, it was probably just natural for him to just come out and say it. I'm the best player in the world. Because he hears it all the time. So, in this instance, I'm going to say it's fair.
Okay.
But I prefer a little bit, you know, the humility a little bit more.
What about you, Phil?
You know, I'm kind of on the fence, and I'll explain why. So I'm going to say it hits the foul pole.
Oh.
I'm on the fence here, but, you know, it's almost like LeBron is going through a personality change. You know, like he's going through a midlife crisis. To me, it doesn't look like he's enjoying himself. And I know they had lost the game, but when I see the Warriors, it seems like they're having a good time. But, you know, I never mind these honest comments and statements. And I used to like when Federer would say, "Hey, I'm the best tennis player in the world," when people would ask him about that. And so I like the honesty. I don't like when they get up there and just give these standard coach-speak answers. You know, it's like, oh, my God, you know, I've heard that answer 86 times. You know, give me some honesty. The only problem that I had with it is because it really, in the context, it didn't make sense. You know, the guy said, you know, do you feel more pressure? Or the guy asked, do you feel more pressure or less pressure because you don't have the talented team around you? So you feel less pressure to win. And then he kind of went off, you know, saying, I'm the best player to win. To me, it just didn't make sense. The context, you know, the question had been, do you feel like you, you know, matched up against Steph Curry, do you feel like you can overcome Steph Curry's play? And then he said, look, I'm the best player in the world. I'm confident I can overcome it. Then I'm fine with that answer.
Right.
It was just kind of a strange comment to throw out there. And I'm like, Ron, you know, my mouth hit up, and I'm like, what? You know, it just seemed a little bit weird. And I'm sure he was bummed out and maybe, you know, a little bit insecure after the win and, you know, wanted to remind everyone just like he did earlier in the season when he said he's not going to be an underdog. Well, you know, he is an underdog, you know, but it's like he has a personality change or something where he's just kind of in the middle, and he's not really liking where he is as far as the team and all of that. I think he feels undermanned. So maybe you're seeing some of this come out, this frustration almost. So I'm going to say it's fair for him to say it. I just thought the context was wrong for him to say it at that point.
Right. And I'm right with you on that, Phil. You're actually the second person that I've heard all day to even pick up on that, you know, and that's my take. I don't have a problem with him saying it. In fact, for the most part, I like him saying it. But the fact that the moment that he chose to say it made me extremely uncomfortable with him saying it, because he wasn't answering the question. The question was not about his skill set, his abilities. You know, the question was, do you feel pressure? I'm the best player in the world. It makes no sense at all. LeBron, what'd you have for breakfast? I'm the best player in the world. I mean, it just didn't match, you know, what was going on. But to your point, Phil, you said he's having this personality, is changing, transition, and actually, I think he's growing up, right in front of our eyes, in a lot of ways. And I think that going to Miami was a huge step in his maturation process. And we've talked about it before that LeBron is so good that he's almost embarrassed by how much better he is than everybody else. And he's uncomfortable with his greatness. So for me to hear him say, and I'm with you, I did a double take. In fact, I had to rewind it on the DVR to make sure I heard it right. I was shocked that he said it. But I got to be honest with you, I felt good because it made me say, at last, LeBron is finally comfortable in his own skin and realizes and recognizes who he is to Cleveland, who he is to the NBA. So in that regard, I was definitely okay with it. Like I said,
let me ask you this, just real quick before we go to the next one. If LeBron would have realized this and would have played this way before he went to Miami, you know, still went to Miami, but that year would have realized and played, do you think that they would have won four straight championships?
I think
they would have.
There's no doubt in my mind if he would have been able to, you know, be this LeBron in Miami. And I'm not saying be this way for 45 minutes. I'm saying be this way in the fourth quarter. Be this way in the first, whenever they needed it. Just be that guy. Oh, there's no doubt in my mind. Because if he's doing this, listen, if he's two games away from an NBA championship in Cleveland with Matthew Dellavedova running point, I mean, come on. You know, I mean, there's no way. Yeah, he definitely could have got there with some of the other talent that he had. So, yeah, I mean, and that's why I was, you know, when I had said before, you know, this, and I guess this is what I mean in terms of this is LeBron that we've been wanting to see, you know. You know, I thought about it too, and Ron, you can relate to this, Ron. I mean, you know, I think I said it to you before, Phil, that, you know, back in the day when we worked together, we got into this rhythm that once a week, a lot of us from the office would go and play pickup basketball, you know, and most of us never played basketball, obviously never played on the level that Ron had played on. So for whatever reason, however it worked out, I was always on Ron's team. Now, look, Ron could have easily taken the ball every possession, dominated, and we could have beat them, whatever, 70-0 every time we played. I mean, you know, let's face it. There was nobody on the other team that could check him. And look, there was nobody on our team who had any talent that would even remotely come to what, you know, what Ron could do on every possession. But, you know, Ron saw fit to try to help me get my baby hook working right, or he'd set somebody up down.
He didn't get it going, though, did he?
Hey. Now, come on now. The baby hook, every once in a while, the baby hook could get in there. But my point is, it was a much better game for all involved that even though Ron could easily take over and dominate those games every single night, every single possession, he played team basketball and the rest of us, and we all played. Now, if there would have been I'm pretty confident if there would have been some hardware involved, I'm pretty confident that Ron would have no problem being like, yeah, don't worry about it, just get out of the way. And we would have acquiesced. We would have been like, okay, you know. So yeah, you know, I just, you know, I'm glad that's where LeBron is now, that he's okay and comfortable with saying, hey, just get out of the way, all right? You know, sure, I'll feed you here and there, that, you know, if you got an open look, this, that, and the other, or when I'm tired, yeah, I'll feed you. But other than that, just stay out of my way. And I don't have a problem with that at all. All right. Let's see what else we got here. That actually kind of takes me to my next. These two kind of tie in together. There was a lot of conversation this past week about what's LeBron's secret motivation in terms of the way he's playing right now. And one of the major storylines in that is LeBron's secret motivation in these playoffs is based solely on his MVP voting snub. In that LeBron feels that it is he that should have been awarded the MVP of the league and not his opponent, Steph Curry. Phil, we'll go there.
Yeah, I'm going to say that's foul because, I mean, I don't think he got snubbed. The MVP is not, you know, best player in the world award. It's based off of this year's performance on the floor. And it's kind of like what I said a couple weeks ago. Steph Curry, he plays the same way every single night. Doesn't matter if it's regular season, practice, whatever. He goes out there and he plays the same way. He plays hard. Now, LeBron, he may not have that luxury because he knows he's going to have to shoulder much more of the load in the playoffs, but he did not have the same type of season that Steph Curry had. So, I mean, number one, I don't think it was a snub. Now, if he wants to use that as motivation, I have no problem with that. I mean, some of the best players were always looking for some kind of slight that they could use against them. And I think it was Dwayne Wade that kind of hinted at it when he was on the set.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was before Game 3, and, I mean, he did a fantastic job. Some of his insights and the way that he was able to, you know, come up with different points of the game to look for, I thought he did a fantastic job. But, you know, he kind of hinted that that may be the motivation. So I don't have a problem that that is the motivation. But again, it just seems kind of immature to even put that out there and then not tell what the motivation is. I mean, I see no point in that. And again, I just, sometimes LeBron just does things that makes no sense. That's just something a 13-year-old would do. Well, I got a secret, but I'm not going to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't make sense to even bring that up. If you're not going to talk about it, keep that motivation to yourself. If you want to reveal it later, that will be fine. That would be the perfect time, just like his comment about greatest player in the world. The context would fit. I just don't think the context is right to even say it and then not reveal what it is. It just seems kind of childish. But I'm going to say that that's a little bit foul.
Okay. All right. What about you, Ron?
Let me ask this quick question. Was this something that was reported that he actually said?
He said it in a press conference after the game, I believe.
I find that interesting. I didn't hear that. I find that interesting because I would have thought his whole motivation would just come from the fact of him going back home and wanting to bring that championship to Cleveland.
And he did preface that. I think that's how the conversation went. He said, you know, I want to bring a championship to Cleveland, but I also have a little bit of extra motivation that I'm not going to tell you right now. And so that's where the speculation came from.
Okay. So that's where the speculation came from. Okay. Okay. And, you know, if that's his extra motivation, you know, I mean, we've seen it before. We've seen an Hakeem Olajuwon, you know, go up against a David Robinson after they handed him the MVP, and he felt like he should have had it. He used that as his extra motivation to go out and destroy and give him numbers. So, is that fair? Yeah, that's fair. You know, LeBron felt like he was snubbed the year before when they gave it to Kevin Durant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the same way. So, you know, there's 2 years in a row where we have the quote-unquote best, best player in the world not get the MVP of the league.
Right.
So, he wants to bring that championship to Cleveland. You know, if he's got an underlying thing because he is playing against the MVP, and like you said, we don't often see that, in the finals anymore. So, I think the bringing the championship to Cleveland trumps that.
Mm-hmm.
I also know he is very aware of what that will do for his quote-unquote legacy.
Oh, my gosh.
He's able to do that, especially with the group of guys that he's doing it with right here at the finals.
Oh, definitely. I, here's the funny thing about it. Had he never made the "I'm the best player in the world" comment, I never would have given this a passing thought. I would have just said, oh, my goodness, here's the media is again, trying to create storylines that aren't there, trying to create stories that don't really exist. Had he never said that, I would have not given this any thought at all. But after he made that statement, and as we've already said, out of place at that, it made me say, and what I mean by, and let me back up a little bit. You know, if you're a professional athlete, I mean, even if you're not a professional athlete, anytime, I'd like to think, anytime that you know that you have to speak in front of a group of people, you rehearse what you're going to say in your mind prior to. You rehearse certain phrases, certain buzzwords that you want to get out there. And then when the opportunity presents itself, you say those. I'm saying that to say this. With that being so out of place, it would seem as though that's something that he'd rehearsed in his mind or had been saying to himself over and over again, I'm the greatest player in the world. I'm the best player in the world. To the point when, and maybe to your point, Phil, because we all say it, maybe he hears it all the time. Maybe that's where it comes from. I don't know. But my point is, I felt, I'm not going to go as far as say it was rehearsed. I'm not going to go that far. But I felt like it was on his mind to say it. And maybe that, in fact, is his motivation. And I'll go back to the analogy I just used in terms of playing pickup basketball with Ron. Yes, dude is head and shoulders above, better than any of us out there, and could dominate every single possession if he wanted to. And I think LeBron James feels that way. Yes, hands down, I can win every MVP award and nobody would really be able to question it if I got the MVP award every single year. And I mean, there's some truth to that. I mean, that's an arguable fact. You know, how can you say he's the greatest person on the greatest basketball player on the planet, but not his league's MVP? Come on. You know, so I actually think that he does feel slighted that he didn't get the MVP. I think it was all, you know, coach speak. You know, I'm not really worried about that right now. We're just going to focus on these playoffs, get to the finals. We got one goal. Yeah, we heard all that. But now you're in the finals against the league MVP. Yeah, I think that's a little extra. I think that's adding a little extra to it. And I think that definitely is his motivation. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what his motivation is. You know, we're watching some of the greatest basketball that we've seen in a long, long time, and some of the best basketball that we may see, you know, to come, yeah. You know, for many, 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 many years. So whatever the motivation is, more power to you. Hey, a couple of, I'm going to throw two more out here to you guys, and these are storylines that hot off the press, so to speak, just in the last several hours. In Golden State, it's being reported that Steph Curry, after Game 5, did receive treatment for dehydration. And not so much fair or foul, but if you're a Golden State Warriors fan, is this cause for concern?
Well, you know, kind of what I've heard reported too is this a kind of a mock of Dellen Adova, you know, receiving the treatment? Because it was like, oh, you know, Dellen Adova expended so much energy trying to shut down Steph Curry in that Game 3 that he had to go to the hospital and get IVs for dehydration. So I heard a lot of people say that he really didn't have dehydration. It was just a, oh, after I put up 37 points on your head, then, you know, I'm so tired of just going bananas in the fourth quarter and having 17 points. And I didn't read into that at first. It, you know, somebody had to point that out on ESPN or whatever it was. I didn't have that take on it. But as far as fair or foul, should Warriors fans be worried by that? I would say no. I mean, it was pretty much, he didn't even have to get an IV. It was just he loaded up on
some Gatorade.
Fluid. Yeah, loaded up on Gatorade, and, you know, it's just fine. So I would be so much, you know, worried about the dehydration is as much as soreness. You know, if you play that hard and you're sore, you only get one day off. That's what I'd be worried about. But I think these guys are used to it. We're that deep in the playoffs. I think Steph Curry will bounce back just fine.
Okay. Ron, what do you think?
I had heard that. So I would maybe put a little bit of concern towards it. Especially if it goes 7 games.
Mm-hmm.
I think they will get that extra day's rest in there if it goes to Game 7. But, if you've ever been dehydrated, you know, now I've never, you know, I'm not sure I didn't get quite the care that these guys are getting, you know, being in the hospital for, you know, getting all the fluids back in them. And I even heard someone say when I happened with Dellavedova, you know, it could be the best thing that for him because now he's getting that total care.
Right.
And he just refreshed and feel even better. by the time he comes out. So that would be even scary for Cleveland if that's the case.
Right.
But if it could go to a seven game, it's a concern. Is it taking his legs? You know what I mean? Is he having to do too much with the ball off the dribble? You know, but they are chasing it down. They finally, maybe see the evidence of kind of wearing down. But I think Cleveland's probably, those guys are more tired than he is. So.
Right.
Just kind of look at it.
True. I mean, granted, after you go with the crossover, behind the back, step back, contested three, swish, yeah, you might want to get a little something to drink. And I'm sorry, you didn't do it just one time. You did it three times in the same quarter to the same player on the same spot on the floor. Stop me if you've heard this before. I mean, I'm just thinking to myself, if I'm supposed to defend Steph Curry and he already got me on the crossover behind the back, step back three, and I see him going to that side, I might just tackle him. Like, no, man, you're not putting me on another poster, and I'm not going to be on SportsCenter on a constant loop of you dancing around. At any rate, I've digressed. But my point is...
Hey, look at that loop. Beautiful. That was beautiful. I love watching that.
It was beautiful if your name wasn't Matthew. I mean, But I'm kind of with Phil. I don't think it's a big deal because I did go back and read the story because at first, this was really just shock media at its best, trying to capture a headline because as soon as I saw it, I quickly dove into it and tried to read more. And all it said is that they gave him fluids to drink. No IV.
I mean, don't you drink after every game?
That's what I'm saying. It was very bad. It was very bad journalism. No IV, no doctor, just they gave him fluids. I was like, really? You were reporting. So basically what you're saying is after practice today, shooting guard and reigning MVP, Steph Curry, drank Gatorade. Back to you, Jim. I mean, come on. That's...
In related news, LeBron James took a dump after practice today. Yeah.
I mean,
back to you, Bob.
Yeah, that's about where it was. So, yeah, it's definitely... a non-issue for me. And the other breaking news that came just as we were about to go on air, Clippers trade Matthew Barnes trade Matt Barnes and Spencer Hawes for Lance Stephenson. And I won't even go whether, we won't even go with the easy, is this a good trade or a bad trade? I want to take it a little deeper, peel a couple of more layers of the onion off, and ask this question. This series that we're seeing and the success that Golden State is having, because when it's all said and done, we'll look at this and say, wow, Golden State won an NBA Finals playing small ball. And is that sending shockwaves through the league where now teams are looking for that sixth man, that Andre Iguodala, if you would, to add to their team so they can have that small ball run as well? And I'm not trying to compare Iguodala and Lance, although they do have similar skill sets. But that's not really where I want to go with it. My point is, do you think that move, that the Clippers made, and of course they are too in the Western Conference, do you think that move was based on, man, we need to be able to have a small ball option? I'll start with...
I don't think so.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, you still have Blake Griffin, and do they hang on to DeAndre?
Hasn't happened. They haven't happened yet.
I mean, if they deal DeAndre Jordan away, maybe, but I don't think so. Now, I just think the Warriors are a special team. I don't think there's a lot of teams that could even copy this. I think they put this team together. I think Steve Kerr, once he got there, he saw what he had, and I think he's going to be one of those coaches that will be able to adjust to the personnel that he has. I don't think he's going to be a small ball coach. I don't think he's going to play this way every time. I think he and I came up with this matchup. This is not something they did in the regular season. I think he came up with this matchup because, as you said last week, Cleveland controlled those games, even the games that they lost. They controlled the tempo and the style and the makeup of that game in 1, 2, and 3. So he came out game 4, made the adjustment. So I don't think this is something that even Steve Kerr wants to do every game. I think it's just something that he had to do just to get a spark, and it turned out to be successful. But I just don't think the makeup of the league is going to change overnight. It's just kind of like an NFL with the Wildcat. Yeah, you know, it had its place on certain teams that did not have the running game or a quarterback that could, you know, throw down the field. So you do what you can be successful at. I think that's what the Warriors are doing. I don't think a lot of teams will copy it or even can copy it.
Okay. Ron, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't know if so much the trade is a testament to small ball as I think it is much for the Clippers looking for another answer to have another playmaker on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
In which you were getting Lance Stevenson. I mean, you're not really going to lose anything defensively with the switch with Barnes. But I think you get another person that can make decisions on the floor that, you know, where Rollins was basically almost coming in like a spot-up shooter.
Sure.
So you're going to have, you know, that type of player there. But, you know, that's probably the only thing that will bother me about the Golden State Warriors if they win this championship. Is that this will become a trend in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
That we will see more of that. That, you know, all of a sudden, now I can't call his name, that used to coach Phoenix and New York and a little bit with L.A.
Oh, D'Antoni.
Yeah, D'Antoni, you know, that his, you know, him bringing that European style of play into mm-hmm. the game of, you know, just threes, has now, you know, finally, you know, broke through.
Right.
So, you know, that worries me because I don't think, you know, unfortunately we don't have as many skilled big men as we did back in the day, but, you know, to totally phase that position out, you know, I don't think will happen. But, you know, but we need to, at the same time, develop more skilled players coming in, you know, getting them into the NBA. But I don't think you'll see more players that are more rounded at that position versus just a strictly back-to-the-basket type of big man.
Right.
You'll see, you know, guys be able to step out a little more, you know, like your man out in with the Pelicans, Davis.
Davis, right.
You know, I think we'll see more of those type of big men as they come to the NBA.
Yeah, I don't know, and I see your point. I don't know if I would say it's a direct result of what's going on, but keep in mind, I mean, you know, you're right about DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin, but think about it though, Phil. When the Clippers go small, it's Blake Griffin at the 5, which would be equivalent to Golden State's Draymond Green. So they do. I mean, they've done that. They've done that before. You know, DeAndre comes off the floor. He would be Bogut. Griffin slides to the 5. You know, and then you got all those wing players all around with Chris Paul running point. So they have something like that. And then you throw a Lance Stevens in there. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe they are thinking in those terms. And it, you know, you made the analogy of the Wildcat. And I hear your point, but I don't think the Wildcat's the right analogy. I think it's more of you know, offensive going with screen plays, short passes, instead of, you know, it used to be the land of Randy Moss and Jerry Rice. But now when you watch football, I mean, they rarely throw the ball more than 10 yards down the field. It's all these safe dink and dunk passes and timing passes. That's what, you know, the Tom Brady's and... you know, and the Peyton Mannings are really doing. You know, every once in a while they're going deep, and that's a trend that everybody's trying to copy, and I think that's the equivalent of small ball in basketball. You know, you're not throwing it in for the big monster dunk, the big splash plays. You know, you're doing, you know, all this small ball and ball movement, and everybody shares the ball, and you know, you pass up good shots for great shots, that type of deal. And I, you know, well, you know, time will tell, but I will say this. If I'm in this year's draft and I'm a big man, you know, where I'm Okafor or the other young man that's projected 1 and 2, if I'm those guys, I'm terrified. You know, because, you know, all of a sudden after the finals, they don't look like sexy picks anymore. In fact, I read an article suggesting that the Lakers are looking at some foreign player, and neither one of the big guys. You know, and they got the number.
But, you know, right now the big debate, though, is, you know, why did the Cavs not put Mozgov in the game? So, I mean, there's still a need out there for big man, and people are clamoring for that. The only reason I don't think this would catch on, or I say I don't know how many teams could pull it off, is, yeah, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, who are already being called the best shooting backcourt in NBA history. Those two guys right there already get you ahead of the curve.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have other guys that can shoot like a Green, even though even if he was garbage the first three games, kind of came on the last two. But you have him that can hit the outside jumper. You've got Harrison Barnes. You know, I just think their team is made up. They're a little bit different than most teams. I don't think even if you wanted to put a team together like this, that you'd be able to pull it off. So that's why I think it may not be a trend that we're going to see, just because of how many good shooters are there out there that are that versatile that could, you know, go and play small ball.
Right on. I see where you're at, but only time will tell. Only time will tell, and I think you can watch the upcoming NBA draft, and I think that might tell the story. You know, see where these big men go and see if they're looking for more versatile players, stretch players, so forth and so on. I think that might be a heavy indicator. Well, of course, we've got a deciding game 6 tomorrow night. And, of course, we've got the end of the show coming up right now, though. So when we do get back together, we'll know. We'll be celebrating the next NBA champion. Will it be the Cleveland Cavaliers or the Warriors of Golden State? Only time will tell. But let's go, before we sign off here, let's go around the horn and get predictions for tomorrow night's game. I'll start it off, guys. It's a tough call to make, but I'm gonna go Warriors on the strength of the quick turnaround, travel. I think that affects the team that's got to do more. If you look at both offenses, Golden State's points just come easier than Cleveland's does. Plain and simple. You know, LeBron James, I think you talked about it, Ron, earlier. LeBron James is working his butt off for every single basket, and that's not necessarily the truth on the Warriors side. They get easy baskets, whether it's in transition or whether it's just walking it up, spotting up, and knocking down a three. They get easy points, and I feel like every point that Cleveland gets is a labor. And on a short day rest, one day rest plus travel, I think that goes against you. So I'm going Cleveland. I'll call it. I think that once they get down to a double digit lead, the role players for Cleveland just quit. And I'll go ahead and call it 115-89. Phil.
115-89?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think they just gonna quit.
Well, you know, you in this league, you know, you follow your leader, so they learn how to quit from LeBron. And of course, that's so that. Man, it's so tough because LeBron, if he's on the floor, to me, it's gonna be very difficult to beat them, especially to beat them in Cleveland. And there's no telling what's gonna happen, you know, if it goes to a game 7. But I think what you need to look for in this game 6. I feel like the refs did an amazing job in games 4 and 5 in letting that incidental contact go with LeBron, because I think a lot of times he's creating that contact and they usually bail him out because he ends up, when he creates the contact, he ends up taking a bad shot, but they bail pulling out, but I think in game five, you're going to see LeBron get every single call, or game six, he's going to get every single call tomorrow night. So I think that's going to make it difficult for the Warriors to win, but I've seen this happen with the Warriors. They lose two games, they bounce back quickly. I think they ride this out, and I think they win a game, kind of like you. I think it's very close, just like game five was. But I think they have the playmakers at the end of the game to pull it out. I don't know if it's going to be Harrison Barnes or Iguodala, one of these guys that comes up big in the fourth quarter. But I think it's the role players. I don't think it's Klay Thompson. I don't think it's Curry. I think one of those guys, you know, goes on a six-point run to where they're able to win by 9, 12 points, whatever it is, after a very close game. But I think the Warriors close it out tomorrow night. But that's a 50-50 shot. I mean, I'll preface it with that.
Okay. Ron, how do you see it?
Man, it is a tough call. I mean, the last two games, you know, J.R. Smith's been kind of a, you know, one-half, you know, player. You know, he hadn't put two together yet. And I think, you know, it's really, really, you know, him or Shumpert have to put two halves together. I think going home, you know, I think, you know, the whole back against the ball kind of thing. I think those guys are going to come out. I think they're going to play well, you know, the whole game and be consistent. And, you know, I'm, LeBron's going to, you know, he's going to be all out. He's going to be all, I mean, not that he hasn't been all in, but he's really going to be all in. And, I think Cleveland will take it to make it a game seven.
Okay. Yeah, and you might be right, because incidentally, LeBron James is 5-1 in closeout games, or when facing elimination, 5-1. So, yeah, there's a large possibility that they will be able to answer. But I just like what I see from Golden State right now. I felt like they've quote unquote weathered the storm, righted the ship, and they're ready to just sail on into the. To Harvard.
And how can it be 5-1 when he lost two final championship games? I just don't understand that. You know, they were beat by, but to me it has to at least be 5-2. So maybe that's when the series is at 3-2, maybe.
You know what? I don't know what the exact what the I think it is 3-2. I think okay. It's when a series is when a 7-game series is tied up. I'm sorry. When a 7-game series is 3-2, with them being facing elimination, that they're 5-1. LeBron, I'm sorry, is 5-1. I think that's how that reads. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. I mean, we'll know tomorrow night. This time tomorrow night, I think we'll have a pretty good indication on how that game's gonna go. I know I'll be glued to it, and of course we'll be back this time next week to bring it all to you, wrap it all up. And tie a bow on the NBA season, just like we're tying a bow on this show tonight. Really appreciate you guys joining us. Always a pleasure to have Ron Rutland Jr. on with us as we go through the NBA time of year. But we're going to get out of here. If you like the show and you want to listen to it again or any other show, make sure you check us out on iTunes. And be sure to check out our show page at www.poshowradio.com. You've been listening to The P.O. Show with Big T and Cool Hand Feel, and we'll bring it back to you again next week. Thanks so much for listening. Good night.